is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To Jupiter with Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. What a joy to travel to the solar system and examine what appears to be a revelation of the internal parts of Jupiter based upon the probe Juno. Bob, the last we visited Juno was sending out spectacular photographs of the surface of Jupiter, the clouds swirling around, making these artistic designs that are unimaginable hurricanes. But now we go inside Jupiter. How did they do this? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. It's important to understand that the pictures from Juno are actually the least important scientific instrument. They actually put that camera on there. It's actually not a very relatively high-resolution camera. They put it there just mainly to appease the public, give them pretty pictures to play with. They don't even process them. They let the public do the processing. But they're great pictures, and they actually do reveal a lot because we are humans. We see the universe through our eyes, so the visuals are very important. But Juno was designed actually to look at the magnetic field and the atmosphere and the internal structure of Jupiter as it orbited through the atmosphere and magnetic field, the outer, and this is not the actual atmosphere of the planet, but the environment that surrounds the planet, kind of like the Van Allen belts that surround Earth. And so it's mainly studying that, and the magnetic field is the number one thing it's been studying. So in Juno's 20-plus orbits around Jupiter so far, they looked at the magnetic field and then did computer modeling based upon how that field has to be created by the internal dynamo of Jupiter. And that has told them a great deal about how the structure of the inside of Jupiter is structured, like an onion peeled, the layers of it. And what they've discerned is that unlike the Earth, whose dynamo is only in the inner core, the iron inner core, the dynamo of Jupiter is produced by a material that encompasses almost more than 80% of the internal structure of the gas giant. I've got a graphic from their paper up on Behind the Black, so you can see this. Most of the interior of Jupiter comprises its dynamo. And, of course, it's a gas giant, so it doesn't really have a surface as we would define it on a rocky terrestrial planet. The Earth would be a very small part of this in the center. You've got a internal gray area core, and it slowly dissolves in from helium to hydrogen. Anyway, we have a rough idea now of the internal structure of Jupiter, and I will, of course, state that this is a good hypothesis from available data, but the data is extremely sparse and uncertain. So these conclusions are certainly going to change with time.
We go from exploring the solar system outside the asteroid belt to inside the asteroid belt. We go to Venus, volcanism on Venus. Bob, what does this mean to determine that Venus is active tectonically?
Well, it's not active tectonically, John. This is, we have to be clear about it. Earth's tectonic plates do not exist on Venus. What they learned about Venus with the orbiting missions, and it's difficult to learn a lot about the surface because of the cloud cover. You really can't see the surface. They've done a lot of radar orbiters to try to look at the surface, and they've done orbiters to look at the atmosphere. The previous data showed that sometime around 500 million years ago, none of the surface of Venus is older than like 500 million years. And it looks like there's no plate tectonics, nothing moves around, but this is a planet of 1 million-plus volcanoes, and most of the surface is covered with lava. That's what they think is the case. The question is, are any of those volcanoes active today, and or have been active in the last 100 years, since 50 years since we started to send probes there? And it's, once again, the cloud cover makes it very difficult to find this out. It's really hard to see. Well, so some scientists took the archive data from the Magellan radar orbiter that circled Venus from 1990 to 94. They combined that data with Europe's Venus Express that orbited from 06 to 15. And from that, they think they have detected evidence of recent volcanic activity in one canyon dubbed Ganis Chasma. And it's located in a rift zone, which, you know, on Earth would produce volcanoes, called Atla Regio. Now, what they did is they compared the earlier data with the later data, and there's enough change to suggest that there's active volcanism going on there. It isn't proven, though. Once again, the difficulties of seeing through that cloud cover is very hard. And so they're saying that the upcoming missions, and there are four in the works right now, one by the U.S., one by Europe. I'm sorry, two by the U.S., one by Europe, and one by Russia. They should all certainly look at this particular spot to see if they can detect more activity going on, John.
Generally, in my amateur reading, Bob, Venus has been called a twin of Earth. Is this evidence of a twin, the possible volcanism, and does it indicate that we could have been looking like that? Sometimes it's raised as that's what greenhouse gas runaway looks like.
Just because Venus has a similar gravity as Earth, that's where the twin comes from the pre-space days, doesn't mean anything. Every object we see, no matter how similarly sized, are completely unique from each other. And Venus is incredibly different than the Earth in so many ways it's surprising. However, if it has volcanism, they expect volcanism based upon what we see on Earth because of the size similarity. But I haven't seen it yet. And so, you know, this is just finding out what the geology, what the status of Venus is. And it's limited knowledge because of the cloud cover. We don't really know much about Venus, even with the probes that have been there, and there haven't been that many probes. For example, there's a dark streak in the atmosphere made up of a molecule. They do not know what it is. And they've known about those dark streaks since the first flyby in the 70s. I'm sorry, in the 60s, but they don't know what the material is. And so it's all many mysteries.
The asteroid Ryugu, there's more information from the return sample. What are they discovering, Bob?
Two different studies have found, have kind of confirmed each other in showing that Ryugu probably formed at the very, very beginnings of our solar system from pre-solar material that existed before the solar system. And it did so at the very outer edges of the solar system and then moved in to where it now sits as a near-Earth asteroid, a rubble pile. One of the pieces of evidence is they found two tiny dust grains that are pre-solar. These existed before the solar system. This is not a new discovery. This is the first discovery on Ryugu, but they found pre-solar grains previously in asteroids. But it just confirms that Ryugu is extremely old. And secondly, they found the materials the components in Ryugu had to have formed far out in the outer regions of the solar system because they're so delicate, some of which have never been heated to above 86 degrees Fahrenheit. And at that temperature, it means they've got to have been formed very far out. And so we now know this formed far out. It contains water. It's the kind of water that they think might have been delivered to the Earth. And maybe Ryugu is a demonstration that asteroids delivered a lot of water to Earth. But it came from far away, John.
And the concern I have for asteroids, what we're learning about the asteroids, it's consistent with what we believe that these are the primary building blocks of the solar system, right? The accretion period when the planets formed. These would have been part of that material. No inconsistency. Is that correct, Bob?
That's correct to a point. Remember, there are many kinds of asteroids. There are some asteroids that, no, would not be from the beginning. But this kind of asteroid, the rubble pile, the delicate carbonaceous carbon asteroids, yes, they think that from the primitive early solar system. And this data absolutely confirms that without question.
We go to the surface of Mars. We're having fun with Bob exploring the solar system. We're bouncing back and forth. We're staying within the asteroid belt. Dust clouds in the Mars atmosphere by Al Amal. Let's give credit to Al Amal. What is that orbiter, Bob?
That orbiter is an orbiter paid for by the United Arab Emirates. It was launched by Japan. The instruments on it were mostly designed by American universities. It was used by UAE to train its own people on how to do this. They became students of the Americans when it was built, and they're now moving on to their own rover that they're building themselves. But so this went into orbit around Mars about, what is it now, a year and a half ago. And it's designed to study the atmosphere of Mars from a global perspective, which is an unusual orbit, hasn't been done before. And so there was two papers that came out that I posted on Behind the Black that are really interesting. Both of them tell us something about the dust and the clouds of of Mars. For one, it appears that clouds form in the morning and afternoon above the giant volcanoes on Mars and then dissipate in the midday and in evening. And then in addition, there was a dust storm, and I actually have a picture on Behind the Black from a few from January about this that actually interfered with Perseverance and Ingenuity. And it was unusual because it occurred in the northern equatorial regions in the summer, and dust storms generally form. It was a regional dust storm, and they generally form in the winter, but this was a summertime storm, and it was detected by Al Amal in the summertime, and tracked and mapped. And it's interesting that they, this is just getting a better understanding of the overall meteorology of this planet, even with a thin atmosphere. It's an active atmosphere, John.
InSight is an experiment on the surface of Mars. It wasn't meant to rove. It was meant to plumb the depths of Mars. And for some months now, we've been anticipating the end of InSight. But it won't quit, Bob. It's got an ever-ready battery inside of it.
It looks that way. It just keeps going and going. InSight, well, by the way, was also affected by this dust storm that Al Amal found. And it's one of the reasons InSight is on the edge of death. The solar panels that power InSight are covered with dust. They've never gotten a good breeze to blow the dust off that they hoped would happen and expected to happen based upon experience with Spirit and Opportunity. Never happened. Well, so they expected the dust to accumulate enough that by August, we're in August, InSight would die. It would no longer have enough power to operate. It would die. Well, we're now in the middle of August, and I've been tracking the power status that they publish weekly. And so far, the power is holding steady since June, and it's at a level that can continue to run the seismometer. If this continues, now we got to understand the atmosphere is beginning to clear. The dust is falling out of the atmosphere, so there's not going to be more dust settling on the solar panels in the next few weeks. And that meant that if it can have a power steady, hold this steady power generation, this seismometer can keep going beyond August. We can keep our fingers crossed. It looks good, John, right now.
Ice on Mars. Bob is going to take us to 30 degrees latitude. What's the significance of 30 degrees latitude, and where is the ice?
When I look at pictures of Mars coming from the orbiters, I almost always look first at the latitude, because if that latitude is higher than 30 degrees, either to the north or the south, I'm almost always going to be looking at some kind of ice feature or glacial feature or near ice feature. If it's below that, it'll help explain the features that I'm looking at, and they won't be ice. Almost routinely, this is the case. And this is it's not me discovering this. The scientists have known this now for several years from Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter data, that above 30 degrees, you can find ice in a lot of different places, very widespread. I have a map on Behind the Black showing the areas where they've seen many, many glaciers. There are regions both north and south that are what I would call glacier country. Almost every picture shows a glacier feature. However, I posted a picture here that showed glacier features inside a crater that is nowhere near those glacial regions. It's in a different area, but it's above 30 degrees latitude in the southern hemisphere. And that just confirms to me once again that ice is not going to be everywhere above 30 degrees latitude, but if you're above 30 degrees latitude and you're building a colony, you're not going to have to go far to find ice, John. That's the story.
Bob Zimmerman, a tour of the solar system, Behind the Black. We're headed to Space Engineering. I'm John Batchelor.